Building the fashion businesses of the future together. Welcome to the future of fashion business. The future of fashion business is about helping aspiring fashion entrepreneurs and designers start their own successful fashion brands by learning from the best, most experienced people in the industry. I am your host, Esteban Julian. For more advice and to learn more about how I started my own fashion brand, make sure you follow my fashion journey on YouTube at Esteban Julian.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. I am your host, Esteban Julian. And on this week's episode, I have an episode that's a little bit different. I have a guest that, although he might not be our usual guest because he doesn't necessarily have his own fashion brand, he is still the co-founder of an incredibly, not only successful, but also influential retailing platform called Seam Lab. The person that we had on today is Jake Wolf, which, as I said, is a co-founder at Seam Lab. And we had an amazing, amazing conversation, not only on his incredible story going from, you know, a college kid that just had dreams and aspirations of working in the fashion industry to working for Hypebeast to GQ and eventually starting this incredibly influential retailing platform. A lot of lessons that you guys can learn from his personal story, a lot of lessons that I learned personally from his personal story, and a lot of insight into the actual marketing strategies and branding strategies that Jake and his team used to get Seam to the level where they're at, not only today, but also to get them to the success that they had even before their own launch. Very, very exciting chat. A little bit different, but I'm sure you guys will enjoy the value that this episode has to offer. With that being said, let's get to this week's episode.
Jake, I'm very, very stoked for having you here today. First off, thank you for taking the time to share everything that you're going to share with not only me, but my audience today. So thank you, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem, man. Happy to be here.
Awesome, awesome. Well, as I know that you obviously didn't have probably time to listen to any of our previous episodes, or maybe you did, I like to start off.
Sorry about that.
Not a worry, man. I don't take those things personally, or maybe I do, but
we scheduled this like 6 hours ago, and
we actually did. And you know what? That made me actually kind of happy, because it's sort of the same sort of attitude that I have when it comes to scheduling stuff. People usually tell me that I'm a little bit all over the place and, you know, a little bit crazy just for diving into things firsthand. So when you did that, I was like, my man, this guy's probably of my own skin and bone, you know?
Yeah. I don't have much patience. It's something I'm working on. And if I have an idea and I want to do something, I try and do it right away. It's definitely something that would characterize me.
I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. I can definitely relate with that. But awesome. Let's dive into it. As I said, I usually like to start my episodes out by asking my guests about their story in the industry. So can you just give us a little bit more background on what your story actually is, how you ended up in the fashion industry, and where did everything start off?
Yeah, so it's crazy to think about. So 10 years ago, I went to college, and I went to I was at Temple University for 2 years. And my first year there, I actually went to school to be a film major. And it wasn't that I didn't like it very much, but, you know, just, you know, walking around Philadelphia and sort of like going to Center City. And, you know, I ended up going to the Barney's Co-op that was down there and picking up a jacket from this brand called Berkman Bros. I really liked it. I'd always liked menswear, and, you know, this is 2009. So it just started picking up like on the internet, the whole hashtag menswear thing. You know, I won best dressed in my high school class. Thank you very much. So I got this jacket and I really liked it. So, you know, I just went on the brand's website. I bought it. I went on the brand's website. I told them, hey, I got your jacket. I really liked it. Are you guys interested in like having interns for next summer? And they got back to me and they were like, sure. Like, why don't you like, you know, we'll schedule a time for you to come up and interview. And then over my spring break, I came up to New York, interviewed with them, and then I got the internship. So I interned with them between freshman and sophomore year of high school, fell in love with it, just loved the whole process. You know, like I had just turned 19 years old, and, you know, a week after I turned 19, like, we're flying to Paris Fashion Week, and, you know, I went to a party at Colette and met Pharrell there, and I was like, oh man, like, this is way better than sitting behind a computer editing, like, movies and stuff. So I decided that I wanted to do that, and so I went back to school in the fall, and I immediately applied to transfer to Parsons here in New York City, Parsons, the New School for Design. I was accepted, but I had to finish out my sophomore year at Temple. So I went through that whole process for sophomore year, interned for the same brand again between sophomore and junior year of college, the Bergman Bros again. So between my sophomore and junior high school, I interned for the same brand. And then that was basically when I moved to New York, was that summer. So summer of 2011. And then was in school, and that fall, Hypebeast would just tweeted out something about looking for writers, and I was just like, hey, I had done some writing in my internship, like, nothing too serious, but, you know, I thought I was, like, a pretty decent writer, just in general. So I decided to, like, write in some sample posts or things, and they, like, you know, hit me up, and, like, were like, oh, this is, like, you know, we like this, blah, 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 like, do you want this position? It's weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 7 to 8 in the morning is when you'll be writing. And I was like, still in college or whatever. So I was I really wanted to just get my name out there, because I had read Hypebeast all through high school. Of course. And you know, was on the forums and just, like, loved it. So I was like, man, I have a chance to, like, have my name on Hypebeast. Like, that's really awesome. So I just took the position, and then immediately just started, like, leveraging the Hypebeast name to get interviews with cool people. And build up a little bit of brand recognition, got to interview people like, you know, Glenn O'Brien, rest in peace. Got to interview, like, Odd Future. I did, like, Travis Scott's Hypebeast Essentials, just all, like, from just, like, hitting people up or, like, getting connected through people being like, oh, I work for Hypebeast. Mm-hmm. And then, so just doing that sort of, like, gave me, like, a good set of clips to have. And then, fast forward a couple years, or, you know, a year and a half or whatever, and I saw Four Pins and really liked what they were doing, thought it, like, really spoke to me as, like, just as, you know, sort of, like, part of the generation of menswear bros, I guess you would call us. And and then, you know, wanted to do a freelance piece for GQ. They didn't run the piece ultimately, so I ended up taking this piece that I had done with a friend of mine about his tattoos, and then I ended up giving it to Lawrence at Four Pins, and he ended up running it. And then so Lawrence and I started to talk. I started to write more for them while I was in school. You know, I would come to the office and, you know, start working on posts there and, like, helping out Lawrence in any way that I could. And then by the time that it was time for me to graduate, in a way, because I got hired full time at Complex when I had one semester left of college. So because I transferred, I had to do an extra semester. And May 2013, I got hired at Complex full time. So all summer I worked full time for Complex, and in the fall I had 4 classes left I had to take. So I would basically be in Complex's office for, like, 3.5 days a week, and then the other day and a half I would be, like, at class.
Yeah.
Wow. And then, yeah. And then after that, there was sort of make a long story short, there was sort of a musical chairs in the industry between people like Noah Johnson and Gian going to Condé Nast, and then Gian coming back. And then, Gian had left at that point to go to GQ, and then he came back to Complex, and a job at GQ opened. So that's when I applied for that job and got that job. And then I was at GQ for, just to make it so I'm not rambling so much, I was at GQ for 4 years, and, you know, really tried my best to build out the sort of streetwear and sneaker coverage of the platform over the course of 4 years. And now I am a co-founder and editorial director of a really awesome e-commerce marketplace app called Seem. And that's what I've been doing since May 2018. And it's been, you know, a hell of a journey to this point.
Amazing, dude. So, I mean, that's a lot of things going on for such a short period of time, which is amazing. I mean, so you started off at Hypebeast, which is
started just as, like, a regular, like freelance blogger at Hypebeast, yeah.
Which is the dream of pretty much any university student that has any sort of idea of what the fashion industry actually is. Then you went to Four Pins. Then you moved to, which one was it after Four Pins?
GQ. That's the one I was at the longest. Yeah.
I mean, so I mean, your journey has been blessed when it comes to just, I can imagine how cool your experiences must have been, and obviously the amount of skills and connections that you must have developed along that journey. But what I really like about what you said is that you can tell that you knew exactly what you wanted and that you were consistently thinking, okay, how can I take this to the next level? How can I get either a better position, or how can I get establish myself better in this industry? How can I get to network with more people, right? So you were continuously just going for something more.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that sort of drive and hunger is always what's benefited me. And end of the day, though, you know, I think that sometimes people can confuse like a hunger to get ahead with, like, you know, they can think that what that means is like they have to be somehow like a social climber or something. And it's really not about that. It just is about having the hunger to like prove yourself and put in the work and do a good job at what you're doing, while also knowing that by doing a good job at what you're doing right now, other doors will open, and always like keeping your eyes open just for opportunities that come along. You know, it's like there's a balance between really focusing on the position you have and the job you have and the work you have to do, as well as just always keeping an ear to the ground to like see, like make sure like what's going on out there, like, you know, if other people are recognizing what you're doing and maybe how to take that next step forward if that's something that you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I completely agree with everything that you're saying. It's not, I love the fact that you said it's not necessarily social climbing, because that's not how you should approach trying to establish yourself as any authority in any industry, especially in this industry. But think about it as long as you work.
Hey, some people are really good at it. Some people are really good at it, and I've gotten very far ahead, like, and have been able to advance their careers in that way. I think that just there's no longevity there. I think that if there are people like that, like, you know, eventually people start like to realize that the work isn't actually there, and that there's like hot air behind a lot, like this whatever person's persona or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if the work isn't there, then, like, you know, word gets around. Like, if people start hiring you to do stuff, and then once you have to actually deliver on what they think they're getting, if you can't deliver on all the promises that you made, or like the promises of your persona, then eventually that's going to come back to bite you in the ass. So again, it's like, it's all just about dedicating yourself and becoming known for the work, not for like who you are, you know?
100%. Yeah. And that at the end of the day just builds even better relationships, because you shouldn't approach relationships with what can I get out of this, but how can I improve my current skills or my current social circle to provide value for this guy that I really want to build, you know, some sort of relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's why GQ is so amazing for me, because it was mutually beneficial that way. Like, my name was in every issue of GQ, like for 4 years, like on the masthead. Wow. And that was a really good look. Wow. And you know, like, that was great for me, but at the same time, like, I was learning so much from the institution of GQ just about how to be a better writer. You know, all the editors I worked with there over the years, you know, whether it was there were invaluable experiences that I had just being at the office at like 9 o'clock at night with Will Welch, who now is editor in chief, back when he was the style editor, and like me and him literally just going like slide by slide through like a slideshow post that I was writing about, I think it was like about the best white t-shirts or something like that. It was like something really simple, but we were like agonizing over every single line, and like just seeing his process and the way that he edited like into GQ's voice and was invaluable. And then just, you know, towards you know, like the last couple years that I was at GQ, just having someone as talented as like Sam Shuby editing me made me such a better writer and interviewer. And so at the same time, you know, becoming known at GQ as like for like a lot of the brands out there, like as the guy to go to for like sneaker coverage online, and the opportunities that afforded me. So there was a big give and take there, and I think ultimately that's why it was a mutually beneficial relationship.
100%. That's amazing, man. That's really, really cool. And can you tell us a little bit more what you guys do with Seam, so that in case there's anybody in my audience that doesn't necessarily know what you guys do, can you tell us a little bit more of what you guys are about?
Yeah, Seem is like a revolutionary new approach to e-commerce that's tailored towards, you know, millennials and Gen Z shoppers. You know, because I think there are retailers out there that do a great job at brand and product curation and product imagery, and you know, it's all very luxury and it all feels great. But I think that, you know, it's almost like a digital version of like the old school department stores, where I think there's an entire new generation of shoppers who love the same brands that are on those platforms. Mm-hmm. You know, all the big designer platforms and then some cool younger independent brands, but who have a barrier to entry with those platforms, just or not that they have a barrier to entry, like they like looking at it, but actually when it comes to shopping, don't really connect with the experience of those retailers. So we wanted to basically switch up the business model, first of all, of a traditional retailer by connecting directly with designers. So rather than having like a wholesaler middleman, like where the traditional retailer, if we were that, would buy products from a designer wholesale and then mark them up to sell them to the consumer, which is just how it's always worked for 100 years. Just link brands' own websites into one place. So when they're selling it, they're still selling it directly to you. We never touch the product, but you still get that multi-brand experience that you want. Like 99% of the time when people are shopping, they're going, I want a red sweater. Show me all the red sweaters. They don't go, I want this Prada sweater. I might shop that way because I'm in the minority, huge minority there, by saying like, I have done so much, I've lived it so much and I know exactly what I want that I'm just searching for a particular thing. That's just not the way that most people shop. So they want that multi-brand experience. So we offer the multi-brand experience while at the same time benefiting the designers and also giving people a better product selection, because the designer's own website is always going to carry more offering than any retailer would. So,
and you're building the relationships even better with these independent designers, so you can carry their best product, right?
Yeah. Because a lot of the time, and this is,
I'm guessing most people, and for example, those independent designers or the people that actually love what these independent designers are doing, can't even get their hands on that type of product.
Well, it's not necessarily that. It's that if you're shopping at a traditional retailer, a lot of the times, like some of these brands are getting savvy to where they won't actually sell their best sellers to these retailers, and they just sort of utilize them for marketing, which is a smart strategy. But their best products will be on their own site, so they just want to get their name out there with the hopes that you'll go back to their own site. Yeah. Because they make a much larger margin when they sell it directly to you rather than going through a retailer. So, and they want to have the customer information. They want to have access to your email, access to like to be able to email you and to retarget you and things like that, rather than having the retailer have all that information. Mm-hmm. So we've just tried to create an environment that's best of both worlds. It's better for the designers. It's better for the customers. But that's just the business model. I think what actually end of the day, like what really makes us special is our approach to the entire experience. You know, like when you're on Seem, it's not just like here's pictures of clothes. If you like them, buy them. If not, whatever. It's like no, like we have written editorial stories. Like I do videos like that explains like literally how things fit me. A product mm-hmm. that's available on the thing. Like I'm a real person. Here's how it actually fits me. We have other amazing writers who are writing for me. We just launched an in-app messenger where just yesterday I got like hundreds of DMs from customers and I responded to every single one of them. Like,
wow.
Like that's the kind of experience that we're giving people at Seem. And not to mention the fact that like we have a reward system that's very, very clear cut about like you 1 point for every dollar you spend, and then you can spend those points on like our private label merch, and our events that we throw, and then we give away a free product every single day. So like, you know, just by shopping on Seem, it just connects with people my age and sometimes even younger. I just like the way that they interact with their phones and interact with apps. And it's not just a store. It's like when you come to Seem for the experience and like, it's just a more fun environment.
Sense of community.
Yeah, and a sense of community, and also like you know that like if you want to talk to the founder, co-founder of the company, you can. You can just message me, and overall, it just is creating a richer experience for our customers and creating more loyalty, as well as you know, yeah. We just think it's just a richer experience than a traditional retailer.
Awesome, and I mean, to be completely honest with you, it definitely sounds like a lot of work, Jake. But at the end of the day, I know it's definitely going to be worth it, because that's what you have to do in order to build those close connections with your customers. And I mean, Seam hasn't had the success it's had just because, you know, you guys got lucky or something. But
yeah, it's never that. It's since day one, like since literally the first day that we launched the beta version of our app, and it was just our four logo hoodies. Like we spoke to thousands of people, like literally, like that's just always been our nature. Is you know, the success we know will never come just because it's something like looks good, or so-and-so celebrity like said it was cool, or those things are important to a certain extent. But like once people are actually on the app, if you want them to like be loyal customers and stick around, yeah, it's like it's literally just hours and hours and hours of building those relationships. And we love it. We love it. We love doing it.
Awesome. No, really, really respect that. I mean, I know for sure there's not a lot of businesses left, and definitely not a lot of come up businesses that are putting that sort of effort into their platform and into their customers. So kudos for that.
I just want to say like, we're like full-time people here in the US. Like we have an amazing dev team out in India, mm-hmm. who are, you know, all Seam employees. We have a Seam office in Bangalore, India. But here in the US, it's like me and our co-founder, Justin Ruska, like that's full time. That's it. We have people who've helped out. We have, Kid Greg, who has been awesome, just like helping out with, everything and anything from shipping packages to, back end data. He's been amazing. And then Nate Brown, who designed the app. Nate Brown is a former Donda affiliate who designed the app and designed our logo and it does creative direction for us. But full time, it's just me and one other dude. So like any content that you're seeing out there has like gone through me or him and
hard work. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all awesome. Going through us. Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. That's really, really cool. And did you guys have any sort of initial investment for this, or how did it all come? Like how did it all happen from, you know, just an idea to actually making it happen? Was it again just hours and hours of hard work, which obviously that will happen even if you get investment, or was there also something else that you guys had to have in place?
Yeah, so like when we first launched, it was just sort of like a friends and family round that Justin had raised even before I came on. And then we do have investors now. I actually don't know if I can even talk about who they are or whatever, like, so I won't, but we do have investors right now. And that's been a part of the business that I had no experience with before joining, but now is one of the most fascinating parts of the entire industry, of the entire business, and how much I've learned in that space. Just, you know, my expertise being in editorial, and then Justin's expertise being on that side, and just how much I've been able to learn from him in terms of, you know, venture capital and mm-hmm. how money is raised and like the processes of all that. It's been super, super interesting.
100%. That's really, really.
And now we'd like to take a quick commercial break to thank our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Your Social Component. At Your Social Component, we help fashion and e-commerce business owners automate and scale their online sales using the best online advertising strategies out there. If you're looking for a marketing agency that completely understands your industry and can scale your fashion and e-commerce business to the next level, make sure you get in touch through our website at yoursocialcomponent.com. Now let's continue with this week's episode.
And when it comes to, because I really wanted to ask you, I'm super, super surprised of the amount of, again, hyped up early success that you guys have had. Not to say that, again, it wasn't
merited or a result of years of hard work, because I'm sure that's exactly what happened. But I'm sure that my audience and me personally would love to hear about what was your sort of marketing strategy to have so much success in, you know, your first 24 hours, because it was pretty much like a viral thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were happy that, you know, our first logo, like in the first day that we launched, we sold a couple hundred logo hoodies from a company that had not existed before that, and the hoodies were $110. Like, that was sick. And like I said, that came a lot from like DMs and a lot from grinding it out. But, you know, to be able to move that kind of unit in the first, those kind of units in the first day and first week was really awesome. So, I mean, and that was like from the beginning, like that's been part of our marketing strategy. We sort of haven't released any new private label stuff in a minute. We're sort of like figuring out what the next stuff is going to be. We have like a t-shirt that we're going to be dropping soon. But yeah, I think that we just approached it like, you know, if we just make a cool, like there is no other, there's no retailer out there that I can think of where I would like wear their logo proudly. Like, even if I really love the retailer,
yeah,
I'm not wearing their logo on my chest as like a status symbol. So mm-hmm. we just knew like if we could seem a cool brand mm-hmm. that people just want to wear on its own merits because it looks cool, mm-hmm. then, you know, it would just be a gateway. It's just a way to get people down the funnel. That's like tech speak, but that's the entire way that you have to approach any marketing thing with in tech. Is just like, especially with an app, is like, how do you get people to see and then be interested enough to actually go to the app store and download something? How do you incentivize them to do that and create an account and then like ultimately buy something too? So that's been it. And then the daily drop was just something that Justin came up with. That was brilliant, just as a way to, you know, another thing with any app too, that every app is judged on from the outside, and even people inside, is like how many people come back to it every single day. Mm-hmm. That's like one of the key metrics that people look at is daily active users. Mm-hmm. So, what better way to get people to come back to a fashion app every single day than to like say, hey, we're going to give you something for fucking free every single day. Like, you have a chance to win something for free. It's just about getting people to come back to the app every day and experience all the amazing stuff we have to experience. But it seems so simple, but that's like one of the hardest things about having an app is just like, how do you get people to open it? Like, I have apps for my laundry and dry cleaning. I would never open the app unless I was about to have someone come pick up my laundry, you know? Yeah. It's all the time in between purchase cycles that matters. And getting people to engage between the times that they're ready to like buy something new, so that when they are ready to buy something new, you're the first thing that pops into their head, the first destination that they go to. Mm-hmm. So that's basically been the way that we've been going about it until now. And then content wise, like we just are, you know, we've just barely scratched the surface of where we're going content wise. Uh-huh. Between written stuff and editorial and video. But that's also a huge component of it, is like, you know, if you can come to a platform where, you know, you're going to read really entertaining stories and watch entertaining videos and experience the app that way. Mm-hmm. It's like, again, like when you're ready to buy something, you're going to come back to that place because it's given you so much value already.
Yeah, no, 100%. So you're pretty much focused, on how can we make this platform into a brand, and you did it by certain product offerings like hoodies, and you said t-shirts and a couple of different other things, and that's essentially what helped you market your obviously amazing platform.
Yeah, and we also had three events too, in-person events. We had our first event was awesome. It was like, it was called Do a Die, and it was like people could come and tie-dye their own hoodie. Mm-hmm. And we've done three events now. The third one was back in April, where it was called The Gallery, and basically it was like a little mini store that we set up, and it was basically like, you know, 20 daily drops in over the course of 4 hours, where people could just like, we just call out numbers and people won the items that had been that were there and in the gallery. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, you know, there's also that element too that is like very, can get very tech speaky very quickly, but just like that, you know, real community sense, like in person, is also invaluable. And the fact that we've had three events that have all sold out, it's been like 150 people at each event, has been really awesome to see, and just, you know, validates that we're doing something right, at least.
Wow. Yeah. So it's, and this is just so that people out there, because this applies to not only retailing platforms, but also, you know, brands. If you need to start thinking, okay, how can I create either experiences or products or activities that are relevant to what I'm standing for and what I want my brand to be? And how can I get my customers involved with those things that I'm offering, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there are certain brands in fashion and streetwear that benefit from the opposite, in a weird reverse psychology way, where they like are very, very top down in their approach. I mean, the obvious example would be like Supreme, who just like is very monolithic and like one, it's a one way street. But they also, you know, have been around for 25 years. So they've had some time to like build up their brand recognition.
They pretty much almost have heritage, you know?
Yeah, 25 years later, yeah. They've so established, but like for a new brand, who like maybe doesn't have like a big name designer attached to it, doesn't have some like super famous cool guy attached to it. Yeah, I think that it's important. But you know, you see like take a brand like one of my favorite brands today, like Awake, that from Angelo Bacche, and you know, the way that he does social studies every year by bringing people together bringing kids in to like learn from these people that they look up to in the industry, having panels and like having workshops and having brands involved with those workshops. Like you see it all the time. Like, you know, you see people like Heron Preston or Virgil, like, you know, all doing these like in-person activations at, you know, whether it's Fashion Week or Art Basel or like whatever it is. And,
just getting people involved.
Yeah. Getting people involved. But also it's like we're so inundated with stuff and information these days. It's just like giving them something a little extra value, you know, for their time. You know, it's like, if you give me a little bit of your time, I'm going to give you a dope experience that you're going to walk away from here, like with something that feels truly special, because it's much different than, you know, just saying like, here's the same t-shirt that everyone can buy. It's like, no, like you know, you're going to come here and maybe customize something, and it's going to be uniquely you, and you're going to leave, you know, feeling like you're one of a kind, and that our brand made you feel like one of a kind, and that we really care about you as an individual customer and an individual person. And that's what really, I think over time, by being consistent with that kind of thing, leads to, brand loyalty.
100%. Because the more you focus on, again, what makes you unique, the more people will be able to relate with your message at a deeper level. You know, it's not the same thing as you know, and this is probably going to be a terrible analogy because I'm terrible at analogies, but it's like if you walk across a guy and you start talking about, you know, the usual stuff, the weather, how was their morning, what they eat for breakfast, the connection is not really going to be there, you know. But if it comes up that this guy's a video game addict and you're a video game addict, then the connection is going to be established. So, I mean, as terrible as an analogy as that was, you need to start looking for those sort of things in your customers, and how can you provide those sorts of, you know, experiences or communication strategies, or how can you start those conversations with them?
And it also has to do with being unique a little bit, like owning whatever your voice is. And I don't mean voice literally by meaning like the way that you talk or write about your brand. Voice. It's like just your point of view, you know? Yeah. And you know, because if you come out and like your point of view looks very similar to everything else that's out there, it's going to get lost in the shuffle, because there are tons of brands or platforms or whatever doing it the same way and doing it probably better than you, because you're brand new and they've been doing it for a while. But if you can come out with something that's unique and does strike a chord with people, then you found something that you can build from there and that's uniquely yours.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. 100%. So you did all this groundwork and all this hustle to make sure that you built an incredible product, and that you were building incredible branding and experiences around that product and service. But how did you actually get people to know about it? Was it purely just literally word of mouth based on the quality of what you were offering? Or did you have any sort of advertising strategy, or did you have, you know, some PR strategies with really solid people in the industry. What was your approach to getting people aware of what you guys were doing before you even launched?
I mean, a lot of it just came from me and, you know, the small following that I have. We haven't spent any money on like traditional marketing whatsoever. It's been all sort of word of mouth and hard work and grit, one-to-one connection, building it brick by brick. That's like literally since day one, what we've been doing. I just think it's much more cost effective than us like just like spending thousands of dollars on like an Instagram ad or something. I don't really think like that would go very far or do us much good. Whereas building the connections in other ways that I discussed is much more long lasting and fruitful.
100%, because again, the best way to advertise something is word of mouth or referral. So if you have people that are backing up whatever you're offering, and this is why nowadays influencer marketing and, you know, the authorities in any sort of industries have so much power over industries because of that ability to transfer whatever trust they have established in their audience to whatever product or service they're promoting. So I think it was definitely the smartest strategy. Do you think you'll be expanding into other sort of marketing strategies, or are you just sort of rolling with the customers that you have now and focusing
on? We want as many customers as possible.
Of course.
It's not necessarily going to come from like getting a bunch of money and then spending a lot on some traditional marketing thing. It's always going to, the money's going to be invested in content and it's going to be invested in, you know, products and events and things like that, that actually like we think are actually going to make an impact, on people's experience on the platform and getting the word about the platform out there. That's just a much more sensible way for us to use the money.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And the reason why I asked that question is because, you know, people tend to think that advertising, just because pretty much advertising, to be honest, if you have the cash, it's a much easier way to get your brand out there. But as a startup entrepreneur and whatever you're doing, you need to learn to identify what's going to be better for you in your current situation. Is it going to be just to go all out on advertising and grow your company, or to really focus on making sure that the platform or the product that you're building is as good as it can get, and then worrying about how can I get even more people to learn about it, right?
100%. Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. Now, I wanna go back a little bit to your story, because I think it's very interesting you having an editorial background into a startup business, and I'm assuming a very heavy on logistics sort of space, because I'm guessing there's a lot of logistics happening to what the things you're doing. Was there any advantages to having sort of an editorial approach to starting this business, or from your current background, obviously, other than all of the people that you met in your journey?
Yeah, I think because when you're writing for like a publication, you know, you're trying to actually think about what is an interesting story that people want to read. Mm-hmm. And you're not thinking, and like, I think when retailers approach editorial a lot, they're thinking, what's the slyest way that I can sell you something? Yeah. What's the cleverest way that I can like sell you product? People are too smart. Like, you know,
how can I get their attention?
Yeah. Like people, like any, like, you know, sponsored content happens all the time, like at publications, but I guarantee you, like, it doesn't perform.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't, people don't read it. Cause like, it, even if it like looks like it could be an editorial from the outside, like people are too smart. Mm-hmm. They can smell it instantly and they're like, no, thank you. But if you actually approach editorial as a retailer, as an editorial, and try and actually like be entertaining and tell stories that people actually want to read, then people will just read it naturally. Like they'll know that you're just like being honest about what you're presenting to them. And like, yeah, like at Seam, a lot of our posts now are like about things that ultimately, you know, have products attached to them, but like the entry point isn't like selling. The entry point is like service or like entertainment. So yeah. I just think that it definitely helped me in that regard.
Awesome. And were there any disadvantages? Maybe, again, being too focused on marketing and not focused enough on other things just because of, again, your background?
I just didn't know anything about like the business side of the tech world. And I just had to learn all that. Like, but I'm a quick learner, so it wasn't that big of a deal, but that was like the part where I, you know, there was a learning curve for sure.
Mm-hmm. No. And I'm asking this question because it's very normal, you know, everybody comes from different backgrounds. So if you want to start something out, the most important thing is that you feel that you can actually learn along the way, because you always do. And not only do you always do, 10 times quicker than you would if you just sat down at your home reading through Google articles about things that you have to learn instead of actually starting doing shit, you know?
100%.
Awesome. Now, before we wrap this whole thing up, which has been a really, really cool conversation, I'm actually, and this is, I promise, even though you didn't listen to my previous episodes, I will download your app right now and I'll try myself, because I think what you guys are doing are awesome. Definitely something very, very unique. And I do believe that people should definitely hear everything about what you guys are doing. Where do you see Seem heading into the future though? Like what's the vision? And I'm asking this sort of personally because I'm very interested in knowing where do you want to take the company?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately we want to be like a one-stop shop for people, you know, like you come there to watch something interesting, read something interesting, have a good experience there. Like maybe you buy a private label item from us. Maybe you've come to one of our events. We have an entire like roster of people who are creating content for us. And you know that when you're there, like you're going to be rewarded for buying things because of our rewards points. And, you know, just sort of like, be a like a end all be all for people. Like there shouldn't be a reason for you to look anywhere else other than Seem, because we'll have every top designer and every top product on one platform, and we have like Amazon level one click checkout as is. So if you could just go somewhere, have a great time on an app and just like be playing around on an app, and then like when you're ready to buy something, just boom, one click, because there, you know, you had a video where someone explained to you how it fits, literally how it fits a person. You had an episode, like a well-produced episode with this company we're working with called London Alley, which is really amazing. They did like Ariana Grande's music videos recently. They've done all of her big ones recently. And you get to watch like an episode of that show, and then you read a cool article and you're like, just have a great time. And then, you know that like every brand that you could ever want is on there. You just buy it there because it's so easy to do that. And because you know, just like the platform and want to support it.
Awesome. Love it. And look forward to checking it out and see where it goes in the future. Just last question before we wrap everything up. And this is a question that I always ask at the end of every single episode. And that question is, if you could go back to when you were still in university, or maybe at your first job in high speed, and you were talking to your younger self, what would be the best piece of advice that you'd give yourself?
Advice I would give myself is, I don't know, maybe listen more, I would say.
Listen to yourself or listen to others more?
No, listen to other people a little bit more. And that's not saying like, I, like I said, I was at GQ, I learned so much from so many other people, but, I think that, I don't know, just for whatever reason, like you're young and you feel like you have to prove yourself. So you like, you know, try and like chime into every conversation, or like, you know, maybe think that you know better than some people from the older generation. But I just think that, you know, at the end of the day, like everyone has something to offer each other, and no generation is like necessarily like wiser or better or like more savvy than the next. There's just like, it's just all, you know, there's just something to be learned from everyone.
Yeah, I love it. Completely agree with that. Now, before we wrap things up, can you just let our audience know what you got going for yourself? So you can, number one, check out your platform, which is incredible. And number two, you have a couple of things going for yourself. You have a podcast as well. Tell us a little bit more about that and where they can check you out, man.
Yeah, so I'm just at Jake Wolf, Wolf with two O's on every platform, on Twitter and Instagram by every platform. And then Seam, obviously, we just talked about so much, so I'm not going to even necessarily. Yeah. And then I have my own podcast.
What's the website? So they can check out? They just looking for Seam at the App Store, or how can they check it out?
Awesome. I mean, you can go to shopseam.com. It's going to take you to the same App Store. So you might as well just cut out a step. Just type in Seam in the App Store. It's the first thing that comes up. It's a yellow icon with a weird logo. I have my own podcast called Anything But Fashion, where we're 5 episodes in now and it's going really well. And basically we talk to fashion industry people about the shit that they like that has nothing to do with fashion. So they have passions and interests that have nothing to do with clothes. And I think that it was
They have an actual life other than fashion.
Yeah, they have an actual life. And so they're passionate about, and oftentimes that stuff that they're passionate about outside of the clothes is what informs their clothes. So
for sure.
So I just thought it was a different way to approach a sort of fashion podcast, and it's been going really well so far. So you can also check that out on any platform, Spotify, Apple, whatever.
Awesome. Yeah. And I backed that podcast up. As I said, I checked out one of the episodes, super, super entertaining and really, really easy to digest. So I really, really recommend you guys check it out. That being said, Jake, I really, really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for all of that information. I mean, your story it really drives home with me, and I'm sure it will drive home with a lot of people, especially people that are pretty young in the industry and they're starting out and are looking to, you know, grow and be successful in the industry. So I appreciate you sharing all that with us, man.
No problem, man.
Awesome, man. Look forward to having you here again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
If you want to learn even more about how you can start your own fashion brand, make sure you follow me on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. Make sure you subscribe to listen to our future episodes.